you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome to the podcast with Logan Murdoch. I'm Kareth Burke, and our guest is Kalena Azubuike. I think a lot of people know him from his Warriors players days, Warriors playing days, or now as a Warriors broadcaster. But we want to get to know you. We want to go in depth.
Get
to
know you, Kalena.
Okay.
That's not how you know.
Born in London, Nigerian family, grew up in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
True, true.
How did you guys end up in Tulsa, Oklahoma?
Well, my parents wanted us to be in a Christian school, and that's in the Bible Belt, that part of Oklahoma. And my parents did their research. You know what really happened? What got
Please.
Us out of London?
out of all the Christian schools you could go to, did they spin the globe and be like, Tulsa?
Like coming to America?
It came highly recommended from someone they knew. But so this is a true story. So in London, I guess witchcraft is kind of a big thing there. And my brother, this is when my brother was the only one in school. He was in like first grade or something in London. And so they had some kind of a weird ceremony. They invited the whole school to come, all the kids. And it was a witch. It was a witch. And he was gonna put on a show. And his trick was gonna be, he was gonna kill a kid.
What?
On everything. He was going to kill a kid and bring him back to life. This is a true story.
This is the most messed up story.
My brother, for some reason, my parents are always big on school. They're always like, go to school no matter what. Mm-hmm. My brother just comes down and says, I don't feel like going to school. Didn't give my parents a reason.
Yeah.
My parents were like, okay, stay home. My brother was like, He's like, all right. My brother just didn't feel right about going to school that day for some reason. And my parents, for some reason, were like, cool, you can stay home. So the next day, my brother goes to school, and they're telling the story. A witch came, was going to perform a trick, said he's going to kill the kid and bring him back to life. He calls a kid up, like someone volunteered, kills the kid, tries to bring him back to life. The kid doesn't wake up.
Oh, like actually, like the
he actually killed the kid. Yeah.
Oh, word. Okay, cool. And how old
Not
were you
word.
When,
no.
How
bad,
old were
terrible.
You when this happened?
I wasn't in school. I was.
Yeah. What grade was he in?
He was like in first grade.
This and sounds really fishy, Kalena.
This is a true story. This is a true story. And so my brother was hearing about that, and my parents heard about it. He obviously came home and told my parents. My parents were like, we got
to
get out of here.
We're going to Tulsa.
We got to get them in a Christian school. Where this kind of thing is not allowed. They arrested the witch. It was, you know,
I
it was a whole thing.
I newspaper stories about this.
There's so many witches. You may not be able to find it. There's so many different, you know.
And maybe I'm being sexist, but this was a male witch?
Yes, yes. Well, you don't think a female witch would
do that? What, like a warlock or something?
Warlock.
Like, okay.
That's what they used to call him.
Came to the elementary school.
Yeah.
Killed a child.
Yeah.
Kalena.
I'm telling you, I'll call my brother right now. He can tell you the story. Tell him about the warlock in London. And that was the straw that broke the camel's back. That got us out of London.
Oh, my gosh.
My parents were like, we have to get them in a Christian school.
I am currently Googling warlock
if
murder in London.
If you don't find it, it doesn't mean it's not true.
While you're looking for that,
They'll probably do like some kind of X-Files type of thing.
You do a pretty good English accent. You can kind of turn it on a
It's not
bit.
Very good. I try every now and then, but, you know, it's not like drinking water. It's not natural to me.
Wow.
We will
it's
never
terrible.
Ask you to do that.
It's
again.
Really bad.
All right.
I gotta freshen up. I gotta get back there, listen and absorb.
Yeah.
And
Yes.
Once I do that, if I'm there for like, give me like 2 weeks in London, mm-hmm. just kind of listening to people, picking up the connotations and different things and their voice and all that stuff, I'd be better.
How often do you go back?
I haven't been back in 3 years.
Where do you consider, I mean, we were talking about Tulsa, Oklahoma. Is that where you consider home? That's your hometown?
No, not anymore. Okay, that was home up until my senior year in high school. Okay. Victory Christian mm-hmm. School, the Conquerors. That was our mascot. Then we left. I got a scholarship to Kentucky, and my family pretty much followed me to Kentucky. And then during my tenure in Kentucky, my brother moved to Denver. My older brother moved to Denver. And I would always go out there and visit and kind of fell in love with it. And for some reason, I had friends that moved out there and I made friends and everything. And I knew I didn't want to stay in Tulsa anymore. I didn't want to live in Tulsa the rest of my life. There's nothing there. It's known for being green and flat. Yeah. Those are the two things. And I was like, I need a little more than that. I need a little more. So I made my home in Denver. As soon as I got done with college, I moved to Denver, got a house there, and been there pretty much ever since. So that's home. And then the Bay is my second home.
Okay. I like the way you talk about your family. It seems like you guys are very close.
Oh, yeah,
Did I just catch the whole family moved to Kentucky with you when you were a Wildcat?
Yeah. We're definitely very close. We're definitely very close. And my parents were not like unstable, but we moved a lot growing up. Mm-hmm. And there's all kinds of different reasons why, but we were kind of used to moving. And I don't know if I was the child that, you know, they were just gonna follow and whatever, but that's just the way it worked. My whole family followed me over there. We had some financial issues growing up. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't have had them, but there's stories behind that. And that's how we operated. So we just, the whole family picked up and moved to Kentucky. And then once I left Kentucky, the family moved again. So me and my brother ended up in Denver first, and then the family moved to Denver. So it's kind of like they just kind of been following me around, I guess, my whole life.
How was that for you when you're going to Kentucky, this big time school? How was that to have a family environment right there? Whereas other kids are going to college and they're like, oh, I'm getting away from family.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
How are you going to, oh yeah, I'm just going to my parents' house after this.
They're gonna cook for me.
Like they're gonna cook for me. How was that environment when you're playing big time basketball?
Honestly, when I was growing up thinking about going to college, I was kind of excited about the notion of moving away from my family. Mm-hmm. And then my family came with me.
Oh, so you knew, like, you were like, I'm dipping, I'm gonna go.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I didn't know my family was gonna move with me. It wasn't surprising to me. Like, I was kind of the child. I was the basketball player, probably gonna end up in the NBA, so they were following me around, you know? But once it happened, I wasn't annoyed or anything like
that.
What
was the moment when it did happen, though? Like, you're over here like, yo, I'm about to leave school.
Yeah.
What's good? And then they're like, nah, Kalina, we're coming with you, bro.
Yeah. Well, when I got the scholarship, so I committed to Oklahoma and took it back and committed to Kentucky because we felt more comfortable with Coach Toby Smith, and I grew up playing with his son, mm-hmm. Brian, in YMCA. So we kind of had a nice rapport with them, we're comfortable with them already. So I committed to go there mainly because he was there. And then my parents, we were talking about where the family is going to live, if they're still going to stay in Oklahoma, Tulsa, Oklahoma. And I don't remember the exact moment when they told me they're going to come with me. It was just kind of, they acted like it was just a given. You know what I mean? Like I should just know.
we're coming.
The whole family is coming. And I talked about it with my brothers and they were like, bro, you shouldn't be surprised. What do you think was going to happen? So, and then my family wasn't like super planted in Oklahoma. And there was an article that came out about my dad. My dad was getting into some legal issues. And that was in the paper in Oklahoma. So they were kind of looking to leave anyway, I think. And they had talked about living somewhere else. So I wasn't super surprised when it happened. So when it happened, I'm in Kentucky and they're following me there, I kind of just took advantage of it. You know, go home, get some home cooked meals every now and then.
So you still
so
had
there
a
was
dorm
some perks.
Apartment, right? Like you still had a you still had your separation.
Yeah. I'm all the way on this side of town. They're over here on the other side of town. If I want to go home and get some home cooked food, I could do that. And they didn't really bother me too much. Like when I was in high school, they were pretty strict. I think 10 p.m. was my curfew. They didn't want me to have a girlfriend. They didn't want me to date.
Isn't 10 p.m.
They didn't want me to go to
Oklahoma. Like, isn't that like the state curfew? Sorry.
I don't think so.
The Applebee's closes at 9, I think.
Yeah. If you're out, you'll get stopped by the cops. Like, what are you doing out here?
What are you doing?
You might be getting stopped.
Yeah, yeah.
Another.
Maybe. But yeah, so I mean, we were really kind of sheltered in Oklahoma, and my parents were pretty strict. They didn't want us to go to prom or anything
like
that.
Did you not go to prom?
So
it sounds like he went to prom.
I went. Me and my brother lied to my parents.
Where do you think you were going?
No. So we lied to my parents and said we're going together to prom. We're going stag. Just me and my brother. We're gonna get it. You know. Okay. And it was funny because my older brother, they had the same view with him, and they didn't want him to go to prom because they didn't believe in that. So my brother, he basically lied and said he's going to a friend's house. But my dad, after the fact, said he already knew and he wanted to see if my brother was going to do it. And then my brother got grounded for eternity.
Oh, okay. Huh.
So we had an interesting upbringing.
As the oldest brother, he took that?
Yeah, he took that. Okay. And then we still tried it. You know, we'll go at it this route. We're still going to go to prom. We'll go at it this route. And they found out because someone snitched on us. One of the my best friend's mom, she got a little irritated with my dad and said something like, well, your kids were at prom. Did you know that? Where were you? You weren't there.
Wow. She was out here dry snitching. Wow.
She was like, yeah, where were you? You weren't taking pictures.
But your kids went to prom.
Yeah, your kids went to prom. Like, I think my dad was saying something about her son that she didn't like.
What's your dad's line of work? Was he a teacher? Is he a teacher? Was there something with the school that made this weird for your family?
So he was a doctor at the time, but he was also kind of like a traveling evangelist.
Okay.
Because we were raised Christian. I'm a Christian. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that I look at my dad. He died in 2010, by the way.
Okay.
And I look at him as the person that showed me how to have a relationship with Jesus Christ. And I'm forever grateful for that. But there were some other things with my dad that kind of rubbed some people the wrong way a little bit. And he used to always have discussions with my best friend's parents, and this one particular case, it was always good. This one particular case, he was kind of getting on their nerves, and so that's where
they just threw y'all under the bus.
Yeah, they just threw us under the bus. And they knew that would kind of irritate
him.
They weren't sure that he didn't know, but they knew something was fishy.
Were you
everybody
in the building
was
when that happened, when they snitched on you?
No, I wasn't there.
Okay, because
my dad came and told me, yeah.
Man.
I'd be like, really? Okay. That's how you're going to do me? But yeah, that happened.
All right, so your family was just kind of, for many reasons, your good news getting recruited, but just up and ready to leave Tulsa.
Yeah. My family's different. We're weird. We're weird in our own way. We didn't eat dinner until sometimes 11 p.m., 12 a.m. at night on a school night.
Oh. Hmm.
Just different.
Okay.
Everybody knows what they're getting for Christmas. My dad just takes us to the mall, gives us some money.
That's fire.
That's kind of cool.
We enjoy that, actually.
I do have a question in the sense that your family always moves around and stuff. How was it not having just one base? I know you said they have it in Denver, but like one base to where you can just go back to that is your hometown. Like,
so Tulsa was home for a while. We grew up there, but we had maybe like 8 different houses. So that was weird. Mm-hmm. I don't even know how that worked. Maybe they just didn't own a place and they just were renting every, I don't know.
Y'all was just 8 different houses, like y'all would move to different places. Okay.
Yeah. We'd be at one place for 3 years, maybe 4 years, then we'd move. So Tulsa, the town, was our home, but maybe we weren't very stable and we just didn't have a house that I think of that I connect to. Like that was home. That was our upbringing, all the memories happened in this house. I have like 8 different houses that I'm thinking about that different stuff happened in. Sometimes they get jumbled up, forget the addresses. So it's funny, we went back to Tulsa. My brother's last birthday, he requested that we come back to Tulsa. And we went around and drove drove from some of the different houses that we lived in, house to house, and we only got to like four of them because there were just, there's so many of them.
Was it different schools as well?
No. Okay. No, just one school. Victor Christian, that was the one stable thing in our lives, the one school we went to. For me, it was from kindergarten to 12th grade. I was there.
Oh, I see. Okay.
That stayed the same. Everything else was changing. So it was a little different growing up, but we had a close family, and I don't think it was really an issue for me. I don't think I'm worse off because I had that many houses. It was just the way we were. Our family was weird, and, you know, we did things a little different. Yeah, that's how it goes.
I have so many questions. Can I just go on
this?
Go. Okay. Your Christianity is so important to you.
Yeah.
I feel like you live a life of faith.
Yeah.
Have you ever questioned it, or with some of the maybe turmoil that you've experienced with your life or some of your dad's decisions, have you arrived at Christianity from a different way now? Like, have there been negative things that were under the umbrella of Christianity for you that you had to go through?
I've definitely questioned my Christianity. I think every Christian probably does at some point in their life. Mm-hmm. Things don't make sense, and you're asking questions and wondering why certain things happen. Like when my dad died in 2010, it didn't make sense to me. He wasn't supposed to die. Could have been avoided. It was kind of stupid the way he died, honestly.
How did he pass?
How did he die?
So he had a heart transplant. And the heart transplant went well. They found him a match within a month, which is a miracle. A lot of people are on the list to get a new heart for a year. It could take a long time. And so my dad got a heart. He had had a heart disease before, and he recovered somehow. And then it kind of came back, so he had to get a heart transplant. It got pretty bad to where we thought we were going to lose him. And the doctor said he should have been dead when we brought him in already. And they were surprised that he wasn't. So we got the heart. Everything went well. And he was taking his pills. And the doctor said, you got to keep taking these pills to keep the heart going. To make sure the heart keeps going, you got to keep taking the pills. If you stop taking the pills, you could die in your sleep, in a day, in a week, a month. You're gonna end up dying for sure. Mm-hmm. There's no question about it. My dad was taking his pills and he stopped. He died.
Are you angry?
No, I've gotten over that. Honestly, I've never been angry with that portion of it because I knew how my dad was. Mm-hmm. He was all about faith and believing for healing. And his reasoning was, He didn't feel like he should have to take pills. He felt like he should just be fine and God should just heal him. That was just kind of the way he was. Mm-hmm. And my mom was down to earth and she was like, God doesn't work that way for everybody. There's a story in the Bible about Paul, and he had some kind of issue where he was begging God to take this thing from me, please. You know, heal me, whatever it was. And God said, he heard from God, I guess, my grace is sufficient for you. My strength is made strong in your weakness, or something like that. And it was basically, no, you're going to keep this. It's going to help you out. You're maybe a little prideful. This will keep you down to earth, whatever. God doesn't heal everybody. You know what I mean? And so that was what my mom was trying to explain to him. He just wouldn't listen and he stopped. But that's how he died. But he's been a huge influence on my life. And I'm thankful I even had a dad. There's kids that never have dads before. So that's kind of the way I look at it. And after that happened, my family got closer together.
Yeah.
Me and my sister got closer together because she took it really hard. You know, I was trying to be strong for my mom and my sister. And, you know, the boys were kind of looking at each other and the family going, let's step up and be the men of the household, you know, the family. And so we took care of my mom. You know, we moved her closer to us. And, you know, when things like that happen, you can either get further away from God and get mad and bitter, or you can just kind of trust like one of my favorite scriptures is Proverbs 3:5-6. It says, trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean not on your own understanding, and all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight. So when things like that happen and you don't understand why, mm-hmm. that's when you lead in and you trust more that God is still on the throne. He's got a plan. He's not confused about what happened. He's not out there going, wait, he died? I didn't plan that. I didn't know that was going to happen. Mm-hmm. That's just not how God is. He's omnipotent. He's all-knowing. So my ability to let go and let God was mm-hmm. tested. Mm-hmm. But when you do, that's when that peace comes. Yeah. And that's why I'm just like so carefree, and I have a good time because I feel like I don't have to worry, you know? And the Bible even says don't worry. So I've always kind of been the joyful clown kind of person in my family. Like when we're together, we always just joke and laugh and yell, and we're super loud. And that's just always been me, but I feel like that's just God, you know, the peace that I get from having that relationship with God and not having to be up and down with life's trials and different things that have happened. Like when my career ended, you know, I lost my career. I was trending upward, having a great season. The season before that was really good. I play that season out. I opt out of my deal and sign for at least 15 a year. And I got hurt after 7 games. Yeah. And you know, you see your career flash before your eyes and you're hoping this is not the end and all this stuff, and you're going through rehab. First surgeon screwed up completely, screwed up my knee completely.
Come on. You've had like such hardship in your life.
Oh, that's the thing. Like, I feel like I wouldn't change it because it's my story. You know, it's the path God had for me. Mm-hmm. And that's that scripture. Like, you don't understand it, just keep walking. He'll make your path straight. You know what I mean? Just keep going.
How did that happen?
So the doctor screwed up. Basically, I was looking for someone that had my injury. I was trying to find an athlete that had my injury that came back.
Which was what?
Torn patella tendon.
Okay. Oof. Which is devastating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In 2009, when it happened, I couldn't find anybody.
Yeah.
I'm looking around like, show me someone that's come back from this.
Yeah.
And I couldn't find anybody. At the time.
Torn patella, that's what, is it Tony Parker had that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody started having it after I had it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Karan Butler had it after I had it.
It was the wrong kind of revolution.
Right, right. Yeah. Who's the football player that does the salsa?
Victor Cruz.
He had it.
He didn't recover as much.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It wasn't.
Yeah,
exactly.
Cruz.
So his career kind of got short too. He wasn't the same guy. So I couldn't find anybody. So I just tried to find the closest thing. I went with Amari Stoudemire, who had a broken patella or something, some kind of really bad knee injury. Wasn't anything close to mine. So I'm like, well, I guess that's a bad knee injury. Let's go with a doctor that did his. It seemed like a complicated surgery. You have to be probably really good as a surgeon, a knee surgeon, to get him back. And he seems fine. So I went with his doctor.
I mean, I do see your reasoning here, but this is terrible.
Yeah, well.
Do you want to name names? Who's the doctor?
Tom Carter.
Is he still practicing?
Of course.
Hmm.
We tried to sue, but that's the thing with these surgeons. They're like a brotherhood.
Okay.
You can't, if I go to court, if I take one of them to court,
yeah.
I got to have another surgeon, another doctor
yeah.
vouch for me and say
yeah.
what he did is the wrong way to do it.
Yeah.
None of them will do that.
That's
the thing with knee injuries. There's different ways you can do it.
Okay.
Tom Carter can be like, well, I've done this before mm-hmm. on someone else. And look how they're doing. They came back fine. Mm-hmm. Or this is how I've been doing it this whole time.
So
there's no rule book. Yeah, there's no rule book on the wall that says you have to attach a cadaver graft when someone tears their patella tendon. He just sewed it up. He didn't attach anything. He just sewed up my tendon. And now, knowing what I know today, he should have added something
okay.
to take the tension off the tendon, because my quads are super strong. And I already have high kneecaps. My quads are so strong to the point where they almost pull my kneecap up. And I learned now I'm prone to that injury that I had. Mm-hmm. But he should have seen that and attached a cadaver graft or something that would keep the tendon from having to heal with tension. As it was, he just sewed it up
my kneecap stretched back up to where. So when I first got hurt, my kneecap was up here.
Oh my.
Oh.
So he's pointing to the center of his thigh right now.
My kneecap ended up here.
Oh.
So it's in Milwaukee, and we were talking about this the other day with Jim. It happened in Milwaukee. I thought someone kicked me. No one touched me. I was driving, took off with the left. I don't even know what I was doing. It was probably a bad, I was going to lay it up. And so my leg just gave
way. Did it hurt? Like, was it hurting like crazy?
So it was numb when it first happened. I didn't feel anything. And then I'm laying there, and the blood starts rushing to it, and then the pain just starts rushing in. It's like, oh, this is excruciating.
Yeah.
And so I knew something was wrong. I'm looking at my kneecap, and there's no kneecap down here. It's like right here.
Do you remember who was on the floor with you at the time? Like who your teammates were? And
I remember Brandon Jennings went off. I'm watching.
It was a 55-point game.
Brandon Jennings went off. He was on Milwaukee. I know Steven Jackson was on the team. Monte Ellis was on the team. Andres Biedrins, I believe.
Barron was still
there? No, Barron wasn't there still.
This old
Al Harrington.
809?
Yeah, Al Harrington. Oh. So that was what was happening. So that's how the injury happened. It was just
build up
before that was, you know, my kneecap, my patella tendonitis, the pain in my knees. I was playing with pain my whole career pretty much.
Yeah. Do you still deal with pain like to this day?
I've figured out how to deal with it. Like I still work out low impact. Everything's low impact. I don't run on hard court anymore. Just elliptical. I do Stairmaster, walk uphill, stuff like that. So
you're a super fit guy. Yeah. Have you had to just
I'd go crazy if I didn't work out.
Everything?
Yeah. I'd go crazy if I didn't work out. I just like to be in the gym. I feel like if I don't do something, I do something every day pretty
much. Do you still have that animosity in your heart though?
No, because if I don't forgive it, it screws with me.
How long did it take you to get to that point, though, of forgiveness?
After my career got done, to fully forgive, because there were some episodes where so I got traded after that whole thing. So my kneecap went up to right here, to where, you know how you bend your knee, and the kneecap should go down with your leg? Mine, the kneecap was up here, and I'd bend, and there's nothing happened.
It was like a knee pad or something.
Yeah. And my tendon was just stretching with my when I would bend. And I was trying to rehab, and my contract was ending. So I couldn't go get surgery again.
How does rehab work? I've always wondered this. How does rehab work when you are getting traded or you get cut? Like, from a financial standpoint, does your insurance pay for that? Or, like, does the team continue to pay for it even though that you're cut and you're not on the team?
If you're cut?
Or if you're about to get, you know, your contract's about to be up.
Well, as long as you're under contract.
What if you're not under contract? How does that
work?
Then
it's on you.
Damn. Okay.
It's on you.
The NBA is a family.
Yeah. Now the NBA has, like, insurance and different things for injured players, so you're going to end up not paying for it.
Okay.
Okay.
So they take care of you now. They're much better now than they were back when I played.
Okay.
Like, I didn't even play that long ago. Yeah. I don't pay medical insurance. I get free massages whenever I want. I get
vibes.
So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, good.
But,
okay.
But, so back then, I'm rehabbing. I throw a year at this knee. Mm-hmm. I'm at a mechanical disadvantage. I'm trying to get back on the court. Somehow I was running, but it was so painful. And they tried all kinds of different tape jobs and different ways to pull my kneecap down and all these different things. They're like, you need to have surgery. You're not going to be able to play without surgery, but we understand your situation.
Yeah.
You're trying to get back on the court so you can get a new contract. Your contract is about to expire at the end of the year. Let's see if you can get back. It's D'Antoni and the Knicks. This is when
Melo
came over. Actually, Amar'e Stoudemire was there for us. He's a $100 million man.
Yeah.
And then Melo comes
in
a trade, and now everybody's kind of excited or whatever.
2010, 2011?
Yeah.
Tyson Chandler.
Melo actually paid me to get number 7. I'll tell you about that story later.
Okay.
But
number 7. We'll write that down. Okay, good.
So I'm rehabbing, and they put me in different scrimmages and all that stuff. D'Antoni sees that I'm still laboring. I'm still in pain. I got no explosiveness. Every time I step with my left, it's like a shooting pain, right?
God.
And he sees the writing on the wall. He lets me go. He cuts me. I get paid till the end of the contract, but they're done.
Was there a nice conversation about it?
Of course.
Least? Like, you don't
of
have,
course.
Okay.
Like, we traded for the old Kelenna, not this one.
That's not nice. Well, and I understand there's the reality of these business.
Well,
I totally understand, but that's, it's sort of
it,
like.
Yeah, he said it in a nice way, but that's like, basically
but
what he said.
But there's, you can't do this anymore, you're gone. And then it's like, Kelenna, I'm so sorry. We see that you're really trying. We see that you're laboring with this, but you don't have it physically anymore.
Don't.
Was
there
a softer conversation?
For sure.
Or
for
was
sure.
there like,
he was good. He
later.
Was nice about it. He was nice about it. And
I'm always curious about that.
I put myself in his shoes. What would you do? Mm-hmm. If you're watching me go out there, I can't, I'm not explosive. I'm a totally different player. I'm not a player. I'm not a good NBA player that can defend.
Yeah.
Like, I pride myself on playing good defense. I'm a two-way player. I can slash the basket.
At that point, you were a body, though.
Well, there's like a hard mercy involved.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. I was a shooter. That's all I was to them, you know? And that wasn't enough. And they didn't want to put me back out there, and I hurt myself again, and I'm a problem on defense. I couldn't move my feet laterally. Actually, laterally wasn't terrible. It's going up and down. I can't run up the floor.
Yeah.
So
if you could like ski up the floor, maybe you could.
Exactly. I had to find some other way to do it. So they cut me. I went and had surgery again. I went to Dr. James Andrews in Alabama, who's pretty popular.
He's
a lot of people.
He's
so
the
is this surgery
right?
out of pocket too? This one's out of pocket now? Or is it like, how does this work?
No, because I got it while I was still under contract. So I didn't pay for that one.
Gotcha.
James Andrews, that name isn't he like the premier Tommy John guy? He like invented Tommy John?
I think he's one of the main guys.
Okay.
I think so.
He does a lot of NFL guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know
a
you're in good
NFL
hands.
Knees.
You know
he was the main Alabama doctor.
Mm-hmm.
But he's like the most popular knee doctor.
Okay.
One of the most popular knee
doctors. So you're hanging on to hope still.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm
your
trying
NBA
to,
career is
right.
over.
And I'm still under contract when I get this surgery. I'm still not thinking, okay, my career's done. I just gotta get this thing corrected.
Yeah.
My mechanical disadvantage corrected. He goes inside, he ties a wire around my kneecap, a metal wire around my kneecap, drills a hole in my femur, puts the wire through there, and ties it up. So
it's like physically hold it in place.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he sews up the tendon, and that's what's keeping the kneecap down so my tendon can heal without tension. I'm going through rehab, the wire breaks. During rehab.
Can you feel the wire break?
Of course.
Did it go through the skin?
It's loud. It's like, I heard it break. I'm doing like my leg extensions. The wire breaks. And my rehab guy's like, ah! Someone shoot somebody, what just happened? And so we're trying to figure out what happened. I was like, I think either my tendon broke or the wire broke. One of the two. And we figured out the wire broke, so he had to do emergency surgery. That was after like 6 months of rehab,
this
six,
is
7 months.
Brutal.
Yeah. So we go in for emergency surgery. They take the wire out. They're like, well, just try to keep going, rehabbing. I mean, the tendon is somewhat healed up.
Where are you at in your career? Are you like, this is it? Or are you like, I still want to do this?
I'm not on a team right now. So I need to get surgery, rehab, get back to full speed, go try out, work out for a team, whatever. So I hope this is not too long. I guess it's supposed to be
no,
long,
but
right?
It's sort of like, I'm kind of with Logan here, and maybe the eventual question is, at what point did you realize
it's over?
Your career was over?
I'm getting there.
Okay.
I hung on. I tried for a long time. So we have the emergency surgery. I go through the rest of my rehab because the tendon is healed. But he couldn't, the kneecap was up here for so long, Dr. Andrews couldn't even pull it down all the way. Like, if you look at my kneecap right now.
Oh, yeah, I can see it. Yeah.
This was down here. This is up here.
Yeah.
Can you see that?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
How freaky does that look?
Jeez.
So first of all, my aspirations.
There's about like this much of a difference
about,
for the, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So my aspirations of being a knee model is over. but so after we do the rehab, you know, it's a tiny bit better than it was in New York, but not that much better.
Yeah.
Still super painful. I'm trying to act like I'm 100% and athletic, whatever. Still didn't have any explosiveness. Somehow I get to the point where I can look good for 30 minutes.
I can look like my old self for 30 minutes. The Dallas Mavericks call my agent up. They're like, we want to see him work out. Is he back? Mm-hmm. Of course I'm saying, yeah, I'm good. I'm ready.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
The answer is always yes to that question.
Of course. Of course. What am I going to turn them down? They want to come see me work out?
Yeah.
They come to the gym I'm working out in. They're playing the Denver Nuggets. I'm in Denver at the time. They're playing the Denver Nuggets. They come to the gym I'm working out at. They put me through a workout by myself. Pain pills. Taking all the pain pills.
No.
Taking as much as I'm not overdosing.
I know what you mean.
But I'm taking pain pills.
Anything to get you through.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because that's what I was pretty much doing. Not every day. I was trying to rehab and get back to where I don't have to take, but the pain was just too much. And then once I could take the pain pills, it masks the issue and I can be explosive again. I could just.
You just need a deal, bro. Just
yeah,
give me a deal.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me just get through this workout, see if I can at least get through a season and just go from there. I'm just going to try. I crushed the workout. I made like 23 out of 25 threes. We're going through. We did spot ups, five in a spot.
Yeah.
Couldn't miss. They rang the bell like it's a thing that only Dirk Nowitzki gets when they do the workouts or something.
Wow.
I made that many shots. Dunking off of 1 foot. They're like, we need you to go off of that foot, the free foot. I'm like, pain pills. I got it.
Wow. You know,
just punching it, right? They're like, he's back. He's his old self. They give me 2 years guaranteed.
Hey, okay.
2 years guaranteed.
2 days later.
2 years guaranteed. I go in. This was not towards the end. That's like maybe January, I think it was. So still a good significant amount of the season left. And so they put me in the G League first. I show them that I can move and I'm okay there for a little bit. Still super painful. Every weekend I was traveling to LA to get procedures done on my knee, get shots like sugar, whatever something they do like just for pain and for, you know, whatever. They just told me that's the best thing to do. I didn't know. So
that's no way to live a life.
Yeah. Okay. So every weekend I'm doing that while I'm with the Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah.
And so at some point, like halfway through, actually the whole time, from the moment I got there, it started deteriorating. More and more painful, less and less explosive. I could feel my kneecap. It's still in the wrong place. It's still rubbing on bone it shouldn't be rubbing on. So it just deteriorated. And they saw that. I was moving worse. You know, and finally they traded me. They saw the writing on the wall. They traded me to the Cleveland Cavaliers. That was in 2013. So still got a whole year left in the deal. I get into training camp with the Cleveland Cavaliers. It's Byron Scott.
Yeah.
He's like a drill sergeant.
You've told me this story.
We're running
before.
Sprints.
Ooh.
Every time someone makes a mistake, get on the line. We're doing suicides.
That's middle school coach stuff.
It is.
Okay.
I was like, really? Like, this is what I got to go through to get on the court?
Yeah.
I mean, so it was unnecessary. And then we're doing, actually before all that, we were doing the running test, that the conditioning test that everybody has to do, right?
The shuttle thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
10 touches, right? A guard has to do it in 50-something seconds. Mm-hmm. Got to do like 5 of them or something like that. So I actually get through it, but the last one, I can feel I'm like dragging my leg. I can't pick my knee up. And so I asked one of my teammates, I was like, did I look right? Was I running normal? He was like, bro, your left leg was just dragging. Like, I don't even know how you were
jumping.
Yeah, I don't even know how you were keeping up with everybody. So my leg went numb. The last sprint, I couldn't feel my left leg and I couldn't pick it up. So I'm still working, trying to get through it. We're doing all these sprints and everything. And then Byron Scott saw how I was moving and the organization did, and they're like, you're not the same player. We're not gonna say it's over for you, but it doesn't look like this knee is getting any better. Training staff has tried everything. So they cut me. After that, I went and had another procedure, tried to start playing pickup. My knee would swell up after like 10 minutes. I'd be game ready. And after that, I was like, it's not worth it.
Yeah.
I wanna be able to walk when I'm 80.
Can't do it.
And so that was the moment where I was like, I'm done.
Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, one of the great things about this podcast is we can have a roadmap, but it's fun to let the conversation go where it goes.
Yeah, that was a long
that is this, no, but that is a story of somebody who tried and tried and tried. You went through so much. And
I went to some workouts after that, actually. After Cleveland, I went to a Spurs workout, played after the surgery or after the other procedure. They were watching me going, you're not running normal. You sure you want to keep doing this? And they were just like, we're not going to sign you, but.
Yeah, are you sure? Yeah.
Why are you still trying
to
do this?
How did it get through to you then? Because
after a few times where everybody was like, your gait is awful. You're not running. And I'm in pain. Mm-hmm. Basketball wasn't fun.
Well, did you know, like, because at this point, basketball is your life, right? Like, what do you.
Exactly.
That's like if someone says that we can't do reporting anymore.
I know.
And that's what we've been doing our whole lives. Like, where do you.
So much of your work is tied to your identity.
Yeah. So what do you, what is, yeah. What,
and
what,
now you don't have it anymore.
Yeah. What's your life like when you're like, oh, I can't play basketball anymore?
Yeah.
I was mad for a little bit, but that's where we talk about my faith coming in. Because I feel like I got closer to the Lord there. And I started learning more about identity and reading the Bible, what our identity is supposed to be. Like, and that's an issue that so many athletes have. Mm-hmm. Our whole lives are wrapped around basketball, the sport we play.
Yeah.
And you grow up looking at yourself as a basketball player, and that's it. And once that's ripped away from you, you go crazy.
Yeah.
You have a breakdown. You hear all these horror stories of what happens to guys after they get done playing because that's their identity. They don't know who they are without basketball. Even some of these retired guys that have had incredible careers.
Yeah.
And it's just like either they can't give it up, they're going to the big three. I'm not saying anyone that plays in the big three is having issues. I'm just saying, like, it's tough to see yourself as anything other than a basketball player. Mm-hmm. But for me, I had to find my identity in Jesus Christ. Like, that is who I am. I'm a follower of Jesus Christ. Whatever I do on earth in this life is just what I do for him. Everything is for his glory. So if my basketball gets taken away from me, they didn't take my relationship with God away from me. They can't take that away from me. They can't take my faith away. That's who I am. And that will never be that will never change. That's a constant. And so that really helped me. Like, you kind of, you're mad initially that your career ended when it shouldn't have.
Yeah.
But you continue to lean into, okay, that's not my identity. That's not who I am. God's got something else for me. Mm-hmm. That one door closes, he's going to open another one. I didn't die.
Yeah.
Like,
but and now the door is broadcasting.
Yeah, exactly.
You're
and
phenomenal
so that's,
at this. You're
thank
still
you.
Around
I appreciate
the game.
Yeah.
And you get to have a meaningful way to interact with the game.
Yeah, and that's how I got from being mad about that, letting that go, being at peace with it, to, okay, Lord, what else do you have for me? Mm-hmm. And I fell in love with broadcasting. I went, first of all, got my degree from Kentucky. Then I went to this little 3-day boot camp thing, broadcasting thing that the NBA Players Association put on. I wasn't really thinking.
Were you like,
well, actually, when I played, I thought a little bit about doing broadcasting.
Were you a natural? Or was it rough in the first couple of times?
It was, I guess you could say, maybe a little rough at first. But I was probably more of a natural than anybody else there.
But, and, I mean, it's one thing to see the game. Me and Carol were talking about this earlier. It's one thing to see the game as a player, but how do you do that as a to put
to distill
that
it in a way that works in broadcasting?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, it can be difficult.
I think I look at it kind of in a similar way because I used to watch a lot of film as a player, and I used to wonder why things happen on the court, why plays develop the way they do, and how I can be better, what opportunities am I missing, all those different things. So I kind of watch film the same way I did when I was a player to better myself as a player. Watching the game the way I do now helps me tell you why something happened, right?
You still do film study then, and now as a broadcaster, so you're saying?
Yeah. I watch almost every game.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'll go back and watch after a game, after a Warriors game, what
now,
we did.
Were you watching on the plane for the last road trip? Because
yeah.
when I looked over, you sit behind me, you were asleep.
I was not.
Wow. Wow.
No.
I mean, I don't watch film all the time.
We was just talking about snitching. dry snitching.
His now mouth, you like that's not really snitching.
Your mouth was wide open.
That's I sleep on the plane sometimes. Like there's
which I think is
there's
excellent.
Other times
yes.
in the day when I can watch film. It doesn't always have to be on the
Carol
plane.
Was trying to put you on the summer game. Is what happened.
No, she just threw me on the bus. I'm writing my mailbag. I can see the coaches watching film. Other people are on Netflix. I just like to look around at what are people doing. It's okay that you sleep on planes. I'm jealous of you.
Yeah.
Totally. You have to get that rest.
And it was like what 1 a.m. or something.
It was. God, we had Atlanta until late.
That was late.
Man.
But yeah, every night, like,
sometimes
on the plane I watch film, but there's times at home when I watch film, like other places. But yeah, I just, that broadcasting 3-day thing, I kind of fell in love with it, the whole broadcasting thing, and that's when I decided this is what I wanted to do.
Yeah. Okay, we've got two things to talk about.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, we still have to talk about this.
Number seven.
This Carmelo story.
Oh. Yes. Carmelo.
Your number seven. Yeah. And then we do need to wrap it up, but tell us.
Oh, okay. That was quick.
I know. So, this has been an amazing conversation. Yeah. I want to just go, man. I just want to let you go.
Yeah.
But number seven, Carmelo.
So I'm in New York, and I have number seven. I'm still rehabbing. I haven't played yet. Carmelo comes. He wants the number seven because 15 is in the Raptors, Earl Monroe. So the general manager sits down with me. He's like, hey, bro, Carmelo wants your number. And I'm like, it's just like that? I gotta give it to him? Can I get a little something for it? He's like, yeah. We'll arrange something. I'll talk to Carmelo. We'll see what he says. I'm like, why does he get to set the price? Can't I be like, I want this amount for it?
I want $7
million. Exactly. Let me hold something. Yeah. I need that paper. He's
especially
got
the New York rent. You need that paper,
right,
bro.
Yes, right.
Yes.
Yeah. And he's paid. So I'm thinking, I'm about to get something. This is going to be, I might not have to play ever again.
Okay.
I could probably just retire. Like, I probably wasn't going to play anyway, but I need a shot. So I need to get.
Fund this Kalina Azubuki retirement fund.
Yeah, just I need to get a little severance.
Yes.
By way of Melo. So. Him and Melo have a conversation, I guess, and then me and Melo have a conversation. And he's like, yeah, I got you, bro. Don't worry about it. I'm like, can we talk about how much? Don't worry about it. I'm going to take care of you. We're just going to.
Hold on. The GM is saying this or Melo is saying this?
Melo is saying this.
Okay. I'm going to take care of you?
Yeah. I'm going to take care of you. Mm-hmm. I got you.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking I'm getting at least
100 grand at least.
At least 500 grand. Just give me, like, this is enough. I've heard of people paying stupid money for numbers.
And $7 million for number seven.
Yeah, that made sense
you
to me.
You got it?
Yeah.
You got it? Ball out.
I can watch it.
Right.
What's up?
Exactly.
You got a contract coming up.
Exactly.
It's popping.
Yeah. So.
What did he give you?
I get a check for $10,000, I think it was.
$10,000.
What am
I going
to do?
That's 1 month of rent in New York.
Not even.
Oh, yeah.
I got you, and you got
$10,000. I got you. $10,000.
Bro, that's a fine. That's literally a fine.
Right.
He gets ejected.
I'm trying to figure out, okay, how do I approach this? This is way less than I was expecting.
Oh, yeah.
Do I come at him and be like, bro?
Yes.
Bro.
What I'm gonna do with
this ain't that. Huh? Like, what am I gonna? That's not even 1/80th of what I was thinking you were gonna give me. But I didn't really have much leverage. And he's looking at me in practice, running around like this dude's probably not gonna play anyway. I'm just doing him a favor by giving him anything. That was his point of view.
He gave you a pat on the head.
Exactly.
I'm doing you a favor by giving you this.
Yeah, I got you.
Because in 2 weeks.
Here's $10,000.
Chump change.
And so I had to live with it. That was my story. I thought I was going to get in the millions and got in the low thousands.
If Carmelo ever plays in the NBA again and you happen to call one of his games, could you do it fairly?
No. I couldn't.
Would you tell that story?
I couldn't be objective. I'd probably tell a story. No, I would. I'd be objective. I'm not bitter, but it's just a funny thing to be. I didn't think I was going to get into millions, but I thought at least like 50 to 100,000, something like that.
No.
Yeah.
But I do have one more. I know we got it.
No, please do.
But I do have some. We did the oral history together. You helped me do the oral history of the We Believe Warriors. We need an epic Don Nelson story. Do you have an epic Don Nelson story for us?
He brought his dog to practice. It pooped, and that was the end of practice.
Oh, that was in the story. Yeah, we did that.
Yeah, yeah. He thought I was an alcoholic beverage.
No, that's
for
huh?
What?
I guess Kabuki is an alcoholic beverage, and Don Nelson is no stranger to alcohol. I think we all know that. And I guess his scouts had done the work. This dude in the G League's killing. Let's get him. And they, you know what they said to him? I think it was Larry Riley maybe that came up to him and said, have you heard of Azubuki? And he was like, oh yeah, I have that all the time. Like that's, he thought he said Kabuki, I guess.
Come on.
And he thought it was an alcoholic beverage. And Larry Riley or whoever it was, the scout, was like, no, no, he's a player in the G League. So that was my main goal, getting called up to the Warriors, to prove to Don Nelson that I'm not just an alcoholic beverage, that I'm a good player.
And a fine broadcaster. Yes. I've noticed so far, we have to talk a little bit about broadcasting. Oh my gosh, I know everyone's like, okay, studio.
Yeah.
But you are following in Jim Barnett's footsteps. And I'm using delicate language here because I would never say you're replacing Jim. That's impossible.
Right.
That's
not,
really hard. No, I know what that feels like, following in Ross's footsteps.
Yeah.
When you get a sense of how popular the person is who you're following, like it can be pretty intimidating.
Yeah.
You're finding your voice. I literally notice, I'm hearing your voice in games. You rev it up when something exciting is happening. You really pep it up for the viewer. I mean, you are engaged in all these games. Was that something did you know to do that? Or did somebody say like, hey, you gotta try this? Because you do have your own voice, but you're also making it an entertaining listen.
Well, thank you for saying that. I try to just be myself.
Yeah.
And I get excited watching games. Mm-hmm. And I don't want the viewer at home to be watching going, they sound like they're bored with this game, or this, they don't sound very happy. Like when someone dunks on someone, I'm watching it home, I'm like.
Yeah, you're on your couch, right? You wanna be like, oh! For
really?
Sure.
So I wanna sound like, you know,
for sure.
I'm hyped, like when I'm talking about it, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of just the way I view it. I'm just trying to be myself, and I get excited during certain plays, but I wanna sound like I'm engaged, because I enjoy watching basketball and just making sure that comes across when they're listening to me. I think it's more, because one thing that I need to make sure about and that I've thought about before this season started, sometimes I get talking down here when I'm telling a story and that doesn't cut.
Did you notice physically what you did? Like you drop your chin and you go into your throat like this? And if you just sort of...
If I just come up like this. Yeah. So I try to go into the higher octave like up here. So when Steph is coming off that screen, you got to be there. Because he's going to shoot that if you go in. It's like just be in that higher octave.
Right.
Yeah.
But sometimes if I'm telling a story, I'll start up here and then end up down in here where I'm.
Well, there's a thoughtfulness to dropping your voice.
Exactly.
So, but it's interesting, right? When you're in like a vocal medium or something on camera too, you really have to be cognizant of body language and storytelling.
Exactly. Because when I'm down there, that kind of gets lost in the game sound and it's tougher to hear me.
How was it? Were you nervous? I mean, obviously you knew that Jim Barnett was a figure because you played in Golden State. Was there an inherent pressure for you? Did you feel a pressure going to this year?
No, because me and Jim Barnett have such a good relationship, and I told the story on the broadcast last night about how he was the first person I called when I was looking to get into broadcast, and the first thing he told me was, I want you to take my job one day. And
he said you. Yeah.
He said like me, And that was before he saw me on TV. He saw any reels or of me doing anything on TV before pregame, postgame, all that stuff. And that's the kind of man he is. So I never, and I told him, I was like, I'm not taking your job. I don't want to take your job. I was calling for advice. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Stop. And he's like, no, you'd be great and all that stuff. So he just kept going on and on. And so that's just kind of been our relationship. And sometimes he would see me and be like, I'm just probably going to do it 2 more years. I'm like, bro, you don't have to say that every time you see me. I'm not breathing down your neck. I don't want your job. Like, that's not who I am. I'm not doing this to get your job. I'm just going with the flow. I didn't have a plan once I got into broadcasting. Like, I'm going to do pregame, postgame for 4 years.
Right.
Then it's on to be in the color. I didn't have that. I'm just like, I'm going to let God. I'm going to show up. I'm going to be prepared. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have fun. This isn't work. This doesn't feel like work to me. And I'm sure you guys would probably say the same. I enjoy it so much. So I've gotten to a place like I'm at peace. I'm at peace. Yeah. And I don't think about, obviously there's some things in life you plan, but I was just going with the flow here. And God just does what he does. And obviously Jim Barnett's a legend. You said it, I'm not replacing Jim Barnett. No. I'm not doing that. I'm not trying to be Jim Barnett. I gotta be myself. I gotta be Kalena. Mm-hmm. And just call it like I see it and have fun with it. And this year's gonna be interesting because I'm guessing we're gonna get to tell a lot of stories and it's gonna be different kinds of games.
That was my next question, to kind of put a bow on everything. Yeah. When you talk about loving watching basketball, to be engaged with the product, to have those moments that just throw you back mm-hmm. in your chair, mm-hmm. some Warriors fans are wondering what this season is going to be like.
Well, listen, I think I have some experience in taking L's, so I can kind of relate to what some of these players are going through and talk about some of the things that happen for the player in their minds when you're going through this. Mm-hmm. How do you stay positive? It's a lot different when you're winning. Everybody's more irritable when you're losing.
Oh, for
sure. Like, you don't notice certain things. You could be in a locker room and your teammate has an incredibly messy locker right next to you. If you're winning, you don't even notice. When you're losing,
I will step over this. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
When you're losing, it's, bro, you're going to keep all 30 shoes in your locker? Is that really necessary? And it's
so
that's
spats,
the kind of
right?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. All that stuff. So I'm just looking forward to digging into, okay, what did this player do? What could he have done better? Why did he do that? What was he thinking? How do you combat that train of thought? All those different things and telling them why things are happening. Listen, the season is going to be what it's going to be. Their record is going to fall where they may. Stephen Curry's out. Injuries have hit this team like I've never seen before. This is incredible. This many key guys out, all your best players, and then is Draymond, what happened to him? His back?
Yeah, he said he'll be back.
Huh? Yeah, he said he'll be back.
So it's crazy to me, but they're going to be around. They're going to stay positive. They got some good leadership on this team, even if the guys aren't playing. And the rookies and second-year guys and the young guys and the new faces, they'll continue to learn. A lot of developmental coaches, like you talked about, all hands on deck. But it's going to be good for these younger players to learn on the fly. They're going to get more minutes. They're going to be thrown in the fire. Get better. You either become an NBA player and you take advantage of the opportunity and look at it that way, like, hey, I'm going to be getting more minutes.
Yeah.
I hate seeing my brother go down.
Yeah.
But I got to play. I got to come play. I want to be an NBA player. And you love to win games, but for a lot of these young players, they're thinking, I want to have a long career. Starts right here. This is a big moment for me. Whether they're winning games or not, you want to have games where you're turning heads and you're playing well. Now, that's not a selfish thing. You're a young player. Obviously, an older player like Draymond Green or Steph Curry who's paid and is thinking about winning now and not thinking necessarily about numbers or what they're doing. It's tough to balance, but I think if these guys come in and take advantage of those opportunities, they'll get more wins. If they're playing well, if more guys are playing well, have the mentality, I got to play well and turn some heads, and they're doing that as a team, because you can do that and not play selfish basketball, right? So if they have that mentality, they'll win more games. But it's going to be a tough season.
Oh, man. All right. Well, if there's anyone equipped to say, like, here's what the team is thinking, here's what these players are thinking, it's Kalena Azubuki. Thank you so much for being on our podcast.
Thanks for having us.
I know. Some of this, like, we didn't even get to, which means Kalena is going to have to be back during the rest of the season. Because this is amazing. It's fun to let the conversation go.
Yeah. That was fun.
Thank you so much. Thank you for listening to our first podcast. We'll be back soon with another one presented by Wendy's, by the way. Thanks for listening. We'll see you later.